Greetings, everybody. Can you hear me okay? Ah, good, good. So just for fun, would those of you who are new here to Heart to Heart for the first time, just raise your hand and I'll scroll through the screen. One, two, three. Okay. All right. Welcome. I have to ask that because I don't know who has an appetite for hearing my same old stuff or not. So those of you who are new, there's still hope. Okay. So as always, let's just take a moment, just a quick moment to gather ourselves. As we say, now that we have brought the body to the cushion, let's bring our mind to the body. And now also then let's take a moment to deeply appreciate the fact that we are the inheritors of this truly extraordinary Mahamudra tradition. It goes back some 1,000+ years. It has been kept alive by incredibly brave men and women throughout the ages who have endured extraordinary hardship to bring these teachings alive in their being such that they then can pass it on and pass it on and pass it on and even to someone like us. Appreciate the fact that the teachings exist because of these people. The Sangha is alive thanks to these people and the inspiration that they've given us. That the path is completely alive and available to us in an incredibly clear, coherent, progressive, authentic way. Okay. As I've been going through the, helping to build the platform, Vajrayana Online, the courses, I was thinking yesterday that it's just so rare, if ever, that so many students had an opportunity to hear these teachings in again this way, clear, progressive, coherent, utterly authentic from someone like Mingyur Rinpoche. This is thanks the perverse blessing of Zoom, because there was a time that this was for the most part carried just one teacher to student, teacher to student, teacher to student. These sort of precise, what we call pith instructions. There's many ways to teach Mahamudra. There's the sutra way, which involves a tremendous amount of analysis and reasoning and inference. And normally when Mahamudra is taught, this is the way it's taught. When a monk goes to, or a monk or a nun goes to Shedra, to college, this is the way they learn. Through years and years of study and debate. But this is what is referred to as the Menak tradition, the essence tradition, the pith instruction tradition, where we're getting the very exact instructions for what to do with our body, speech, and mind, such that we can reconnect with our basis. This is extraordinary. And I must say, so much due to the generosity of Mingyur Rinpoche. So all of you are, I'm sure, in a slightly different place in the course, and all of you have different time to allot to it, and so that is completely understandable. But I just wanted to give us a 2-minute thumbnail of why, where we are, why we are, and why Mahamudra is such a big deal. And if you've heard me give you this thumbnail before, that's great. And if you say, please don't give me this again, I've heard it too many times, that's wonderful. Because I want us to carry this sort of logic of what we're doing. Because as we say, knowing one thing accomplishes all. There's one thing we need to know. And so we need to know why we need to know this, why it's so important. Otherwise, we'll just take this in and put it on our library, ever-expanding library of our Dharma books that we seem to collect but never get back to. This is the main point. So, as we've said so many times, everything we do, Migyur Rinpoche says this over and over again, everything we do, every time we move our body, blink our eyes, whatever we do, is an impulse for us to have the kind of ease and well-being and freedom from distress that we imagine as possible. We have this imagination that there is a way of being more relaxed, more open, more connected. We just have this in our system. The Buddha had it in his system. This is why he went on in his endeavor. We're haunted by this fact. The way that we know we're haunted by this fact is we always feel like something is wrong. Actually, this is wisdom, wanting to be happy. However we do it, however poorly we do it, however dysfunctionally we do it, at the core, this is our abiding, innate loving kindness. Wanting to be free of distress, disease, dissatisfaction, this is our abiding compassion. And knowing something is wrong, this is wisdom. So if we find ourselves all screwed up and neurotic, this is not a sin. This is not, there's not something wrong. This is the way we all are. This is the way we should be. This is the way we find ourselves. The truth of this is why the Buddha taught the First Noble Truth. This is the First Noble Truth. But what we've found is that in an impulsive effort to find what we want, we've run out into the pathways of appearance and trying to cobble together this world, a kind of world that, you know, just the right job, the right this, the right home, the right friends, the right body, the right diet, and all this stuff, you know. And we get it all together, and yet, for some reason, it doesn't work. We become increasingly freaked out. Why? Because intuitively we know that all of those things are moving and changing. And so at the end of the day, this thing that we've put together is not trustworthy. So we panic even more. So we become lost out in all that. We don't know what to do. And as Tolkujin said, we're homesick. We're homesick. We are lost. We know we're lost. Intuitively, we know we're lost. And that lost feeling engenders a kind of homesickness. As we've used this image so many times, but it's so evocative. Tolkujin used to say that birds fly far from the nest in the day, but come home at night. We've flown far from the nest, but we've lost our way home. We need to find our way back. This is the path. We need to find our way back. We are like this. Tokujin always said, samsara is a mind turned outward, entangled in appearance. Nirvana is a mind resting here in its own place. That's the entire path. That's the problem. That's the path. And that's the fruition in just this one image. So if we can just carry this one image, for instance, whatever image that we carry, this would be an image to carry in the day when we're going about our day, say, okay, where am I? Am I out entangled, desperately grasping at the world? Or am I here? Whatever that means, am I just resting? So the beauty of the Mahamudra approach, among many other things, one is that it offers a proposition, a profound proposition, that What we're looking for out there is already here, fully present, fully available, fully cooked, unchanging, unborn, undying. Our true home is already here. And it's here for the taking. It's here for the meeting. It's here to reunite with. This is everything, this profound proposition. Just imagining this as being possible has the power to reorient us, to relax us deeply, to inspire us, to get us moving in the right direction. This is what it means when we say, knowing one thing accomplishes all. Knowing this nature means experiencing this nature, abiding in this nature, becoming familiar with this nature. Knowing this nature takes care of our, you know, an enormous part of our anxiety, our fear, our worry, our dread, our dis-ease. Just knowing this proposition, that it's okay, that we're not lost. In fact, not only are we not lost, we are so not lost, we don't even know it. We have it here. We're already, what we're looking for, we already are. What we're looking to find, we already have here. As you know, there's that famous image of the, in the Indian tradition, of the hunter who goes into the forest to hunt an elephant only to return empty-handed, to find that the elephant is waiting for him at the back door. This is the way we are. So then the practices of Mahamudra are a way to step by step bring us home. Step by step become familiar with this abiding nature. So in the beginning, we hear the view, the approach, the possibility, the promise. And then we engage. We engage through meditation. We engage through learning, as we're doing. We engage through meditation. And in doing that, we're conditioning our mind. This is what the meaning of bhavana in meditation means. We're conditioning our mind so that we're changing the impulse from running out, 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 to coming back here. And we do this in a 10,000 little steps of noticing, coming back, noticing, coming back, distracted, coming back, distracted, coming back. And that's the path. So this is meditation. And then we take this into our day. Throughout the day, we notice, am I running out here or am I abiding here? Am I chasing out after here? Or is there just some sense of simple, very simple presence, a simple presence of awareness? Awareness is synonymous with this ground, with this basic nature. Is that present in a very simple way or not? Even just asking that question. By definition, even asking that question brings us back to awareness. Where am I? Bingo. This is what we need to ask, or some rendition of it throughout the day. How is my grasping? Am I like this or am I like this? Am I like this or am I like this? This is what it means to be a yogin, a true practitioner, to use your life to play with this principle. Oh, I got taken, carried away there. Let's come back. Oh, I got carried. Oh, let's come back. So this is the practice for us, the sort of what we call the application. This is this constant discernment. This is the mindfulness piece. How distracted am I? Once we're back, there's nothing to do. fact, anything we do once we come back is more doing. That gets in the way. So the mindfulness piece is to see how distracted we are. And we can use any hint or prompt or image we use. One of my, as I've mentioned before, one of my new favorite quotes is from Jamon Controle that applies to this. He said, having a curious attention to all activities is like having Shakyamuni Buddha as your constant companion. If that's the only guidance that we can remember, that's fantastic. Just a curious attention. How tight am I? How agitated am I? How free and open am I? How collapsed I am? How open am I? This is the application, the day-to-day application. And then the fruition, when things begin to move, when things begin to come to fruition, the fruit of our training and our understanding begins to come. As Mingyur Rinpoche says, it comes in, you know, there are sort of broad stages. You know, first we understand the material, which is what we're learning now. And then we begin to taste the meditation. And as he says, there's a lot of flavor. He always says this very interesting comment. There's a lot of flavor. Sometimes we feel great peace, great warmth. Sometimes we have some energetic things happening. Sometimes we, if we're on retreat, for instance, we can begin to feel like, oh, I'm just about to levitate. All sorts of feelings and experiences in our body, in our emotions, in our mind. So this is the experience level when we're beginning to experience Mahamudra. And then at some point, to the consternation of everybody, and it's a little bewildering, sometimes that flavor goes away. There's just not so much amazing stuff and great feelings and great experiences. That's a sign that meditation and mind now have become so blended that they're one thing. So there's no sort of new thing. Meditation has become Mahamudra, or we, mind has become Mahamudra. And then along the way, then there's, as we know, the paths and the stages, the bhumis to walk through. So this is a long journey, but a fabulous journey. One that each step of the way feels rich. It feels enriching. It feels right. It feels true. Just feeling like we've come home to some, that we've found a method, that we've found the medicine. That has the ability to settle a lot of our anxiety, even though we're neurotic, we continue to be neurotic as can be, but our anxiety around our life begins to just soften up. Everything begins to just loosen up a little bit. What started out as a mind like this has the capacity to open from time to time. This is the path. So those are just some comments about where we are. And let's open it up. There's so much to talk about. I'd much rather hear what you have to say than what I have to say. Lan?
Yes, hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm kind of freaking out. Yesterday, I was watching the section from the Essence Course where Mingyur Rinpoche talks about the pointing out instructions. And I feel kind of like slammed by that. You know, I'm currently level 3 of Joy of Living.
Mm-hmm.
And doing this process, it's been always like, it's just been great. I haven't felt like I'm chasing a goal. I felt like I'm just doing this process, doing this practice step by step. And it keeps opening up. You know, I remember when it went from the early stuff into more analytical meditation, I was kind of like, ooh, this is harder. I don't like this as much, but I get the benefit and everything and just keep going with it. And I love it. And I feel like now I'm being told, well, the Mahamudra is the top of the peak, or it's the real goal. And yet you can't have the real goal until you get these pointing out instructions, but you can't have them. I have to finish Joy of Living and then spend what, another 3 years doing, I was doing some of the reading. I'm not clear about it at all, but the Nectar of the Path and the Path of Liberation, whatever. And then all the stuff before I'm allowed to have the real thing. So now for the first time, I feel like, oh, there's this thing up there in the future that I really need to have instead of just being with the instruction that I'm currently having. And so I kind of feel like disorienting with that.
Yeah. So Don, I'm glad you asked that. So
yeah,
first
so
of all,
Don,
it's not,
it's, that. So first of all, it's not, it's
okay. Someone, okay. Maybe everyone needs to mute because I'm
someone,
getting,
maybe everyone needs to mute because I'm getting,
there we go. Yeah. So first of all, it's not 3 years. Once you start the path of liberation, it goes much more quickly than that. If you put the time in it, there's homework for each of the levels. And the path of liberation is where Mingyur Rinpoche sort of formally, where we formally engage on the training of Mahamudra in a very coherent way. And so you do the path. Anybody who's done the Joy of Living can do the Path of Liberation 1. That comes online. And then that's the beginning. And there's meditation practices and contemplations for that. The level 3 and the 4 are also online. The level 2 has to be done in person. And the reason is this. This is the kind of special, one of the special attributes of our tradition. That right now, our mind's nature is everywhere. It's present at all times. It's so present that we can't see it. We can't distinguish it. We can't distinguish it from all the other noise, you could say. And so from that point of view, mind's nature is self-secret. It's secret to us. We can't find it. If we could, we'd all be enlightened. Well, I mean, we've all been enlightened, you know, many, many years ago. So the in the pointing out instruction, the Lama through progressing through a logic, through some meditation and creating an environment, it's possible for a qualified teacher to point out within the noise, this is the nature of mind. This is it right now. This experience you're having right now, this is tantamount. This is a taste of enlightenment. And then it's no longer secret. Then we know what it is. And on the basis of that confidence, then we continue to practice, and the practice is referred to what we've experienced. This is what we call taking the fruition as path. We get pointing out, and then everything after that is referred to that. The reason that it has to be done in person is because if someone said, oh, baked bread is fabulous, oh, it's just the most amazing thing, and someone held up on a Zoom meeting a picture of a newly baked, you know, loaf of bread, it might be attractive and we might believe intellectually, oh, I'm sure that looks like good bread. But if we smell that bread, it goes completely into our system. We know deeply what fresh baked bread is all about. Similarly, when we get pointing out, we experience it in the environment, we experience it in the person, we're guided to experience in ourselves. It becomes who we are on a cellular level. It's an incredibly profound method. So this is, it doesn't take so long, and it's just one in-person experience. when I first got these teachings in 1981 from Mingyur Rinpoche's father in Boulder, Colorado, he was on a one-year tour, his only tour outside of Asia, outside of the Himalayas. It was so compelling. I got up and moved my wife and daughter and myself to Nepal. That's how consequential getting pointing out is. So again, right now it's self-secret. We can't find it. And then we create the circumstance. It's pointed out to us. And then for the rest of our lives, we know how to orient not only our meditation practice, but our day-to-day experience. And this is amazing. Lon, does that make sense?
I still have to sit with this for a while or read more about it, I guess. But I understand what you're saying.
Well, you don't have to do it also. You know, you don't have to. This is an offering. We don't need to do this. We don't need to take the path of liberation. We don't need to do that. As Mingyur Rinpoche is very, very dedicated and has said a trillion times that the joy of living is a full package for our lives. So I think it is also just what our inclination is. Yeah. Elaine?
Yes, thank you. And thank you so much for your opening today. If I understand what you're saying, and I think I do, so correct me if I'm wrong, that what you're talking about in short is, you know, once the dissatisfaction of appearances, you know, becomes really, really evident. So in contrast to that, the refuge then is in the nature of mind, in Mahamudra. So as I have a question, though, that relates to the talk by Andy Carr that seems, you know, connected to this, in saying, you know, in relation to his book, Into the Mirror. So it the way I understood that, and I haven't read the book yet, but that is that the going inside, rather than being, you know, seduced or hung up by the external appearances and even of others, that the thing is to really to go to be within oneself, within the Mahamudra or the nature of mind. So the question that I have then is, what do you do when you encounter people that have a very negative mindset? And I guess the really extreme example would be someone like Hitler, you know, or a fascist mentality. I mean, how do you view this? You know, how do you see the inner Buddha in a person like this? Like, it's so hard not to get caught up in criticizing, you know, their negative aspects. So how does this tie in?
So that's true. So when we get caught up, we get tainted, we get disturbed, we disturb the next person, and samsara goes around and around. One caught up person affecting the next caught up person, that's samsara. So in response to that, I asked Carl Brunholzer, I said, Carl, like, what's a takeaway for you from all the Vajra songs, the Dohas that you've translated over the years? And he said, it's something like this. He said, recognize your own nature and have compassion for everybody who hasn't. That's the guidance. Because as crazy as a Hitler was, there's, and this Hitler question is an important one. So let's just take a difficult family member. Or if that's too difficult, take a dog next door that barks. So we work where we can work to find when we get caught and then open that back up. And as soon as we open, love and compassion are present. Love and compassion is the aroma of awareness, is the humidity of awareness. So we open up again. we engage again with a light hand, with the quality of compassion. The farther we go here, in other words, the more intimate we become here, we become deeply intimate with all aspects of being human, our hopes, our fears, our ups, our downs, our breakdowns, our breakthroughs. And as we become intimate here, we become intimate with everybody who has hopes and fears. And then that intimacy expands as a sort of empathetic warmth and compassion, broader and broader. And over time, when there's less impulse to collapse here, it just opens as a free-flowing radiance of kindness and compassion. And then it doesn't matter. At some point, it doesn't matter. There's no logic to it. It doesn't matter whether the sun is shining on your neighborhood or all neighborhoods or Hitler's neighborhood. It's just the sun is shining and the wind is blowing. This is non-referential compassion. This is where this goes eventually. But we start step by step.
I can, you know, really appreciate that. But I think, you know, what I was getting at is what do you do then when this kind of person is interfering with your life by imposing their own restrictions on you?
You use them. They become the perfect teacher for patience, for openness, for warmth, for compassion. They become Atisha's tea boy, if you've ever heard of that story. This is the way everything is. Everything is irritating. When mind is collapsed, even little kids playing next door becomes infuriating. Everybody becomes irritating. You just check it out tomorrow or today. When mind is open and relaxed for whatever reason, we filter the world in a different way. When mind is closed like this and we're walking down in our town on Friday evening and we hear some teenage boys getting rowdy, we think, oh, those damn kids, why don't they shut up? I bet they're drinking or doing drugs or something. When mind is open and relaxed and we hear those same kids being rowdy, we think, how wonderful. They have fun. They're having fun. They have friends. Don't we say that we want all beings to be happy? Here's evidence of them being happy. We can celebrate that. That's called sympathetic joy. The whole path is an answer to your question, Elaine. The whole path is an answer to that question.
Okay.
So if you take this as a guiding sort of koan, this will take you, literally will take you all the way to the end of the path.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So the point is not to fall into the trap of getting caught up in the same kind of response or reaction.
Of course, if you don't do something different, nothing's going to change. If we keep giving our well-being to the next person on the corner, to every person we meet, oh, I was in a good mood 5 minutes ago, but here, you take control of my mood, or you take control. What it means to be a practitioner is to work, engage with our all the processes of our perception, our reactivity, our response. This is how we train the mind and tame the mind. Everything becomes an opportunity for them.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
This is what, in Vajrayana language, we begin to talk about the guru of the symbolic guru of the phenomenal world. In other words, the entire world rises up as our perfect teacher. Marilyn.
Tim, you will be able to say whether Pema Chodron said, but you don't have to be a doormat. I don't know whether it was she or not, but that was not my question. Is I would like some clarification. I listened to the reflection for this second section, and we were referred to, if we chose to, courts, three yanas, a piece in courts, three yanas about the view. And here's my confusion or needs explanation. The view, I'm reading from the transcript of Mentor Rinpoche's talk in View Meditation Application of Fruition. The view is the cognitive level our understanding, knowledge, wisdom, and also our beliefs, mindset, and perspective. Court says, it's not so much about ideas as it is about a direct exploration of our own minds, which really spoke to me, you know, and it's a starting point. So could you unravel that for me? Because one Rinzai Rinpoche seems to be saying ideas as well, understanding, knowledge, wisdom, as well as our beliefs, mindset, etc. And I guess what Court is talking about is our beliefs, mindset, and using that as a starting point. Does that make sense, that question?
Yeah. Rinzai Rinpoche's fascination with Western science encourages him to put things in these categories of cognitive level, feeling level, habit level, and all of these kinds of things. So I think they're both right. At the end of the day, the experience of Mahamudra, the path of Mahamudra, is a deeply embodied path that when we change our cognition about the world, our experience is deep. They're not separated, in other words. When we change what we believe or think about the world, our feelings change. Our activity automatically changes. So, for instance, if we hear those boys, you know, on the corner, and we think, oh, they're little hooligans, you know, that have stolen some beer and they're getting drunk, then our feeling level will change completely. If in our cognitive level, we'd think, oh, these wonderful kids, they want to have fun like everybody else and they're doing it, then our feeling level changes. So it's a loop it's a kind of loop that everything involves everything. So I think that Court is coming from a little bit more classical way of discussing it. Rinzai Rinpoche is adding in some structures that are a little bit unique, but it's saying the exact same thing.
Thank you very much. Marilyn?
Yeah.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. So whatever Rinzai Rinpoche says is perfect, and then you take a little Courtland and you add some flavor to it and blend it, and it's a perfect milkshake. Done.
Hey, Tim.
Yeah, hi.
So I wanted to follow up on the pointing out question. There were two aspects. So one, is it people can recognize without having it pointed out, I think. Is that not true?
Well, I think
it isn't.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I think that's why I made that point, that the nature of mind is everywhere. It's anywhere. It's everywhere. So what makes perception possible, breathing possible, everything. It's so close to us. As Tolkien used to say, it's so simple. We don't trust it. It's so close. It's like a fly on a bridge of our nose. We don't see it. So yes, in the Sutrayana tradition, just talking about it and using these kinds of words and then resting in that, we can have the experience of nature. We're always having the experience of nature of mind. It's just that we have so many experiences that it's hard for us to ascertain. So generally, we are having experiences of nature of mind. As you know, at moments of great fear, we're right there. Great love and compassion, we're right there. Great beauty, we're right there. Great devotion, we're right there. At the moment of falling asleep, if sometimes we're right there. At the moment of death, we're right there. It's all around us. So the pointing out instruction is a method to help make that more distinct. I can remember when I was 15, I was in boarding school in Europe, and we were on a field trip, and we entered this modern Chapel de Notre Dame out in the country by a famous architect named Le Corbusier. And we walked, it wasn't impressive to look at, and we walked in, and from somewhere a cantor began to sing. And I had, hands down, the most profound nature of mind experience I ever had in my life, before or after. My whole life sort of is a follow-on from that moment. So if we're open enough and available enough, the world will just pummel us with nature of mind experiences. That's why it's so helpful for someone to say, this is it, and this is noise. But again, we don't need to get, you know, this is unique, as you know, to the, fundamentally, this is unique to the Mahamudra and Dzogchen traditions and the rest of the Buddhist tradition. They don't carry this method. Yeah. What else? You had another question.
So my follow-up question is, my experience with pointing out instructions is that the actual pointing out instructions that happen in POL 2 have never done much for me. I mean, I get the instructions and I go home and I practice them, and then I get some sense of what Rinpoche was talking about. But the actual moment when he gives the instruction was not like what you're describing, where with Tolku Ujin Rinpoche, where, you know, you, something happened and you recognized something and you moved your whole family to Kathmandu. That has not been my experience. So it just made me wonder about that. You know, I know there are other people who are like me, and the actual moment of pointing out doesn't feel like you've recognized anything.
Yeah, yeah. So as you know, because you've heard many people ask the same question, it completely doesn't matter. And in my case, I was just so overwhelmed by Tolku Ujin as a person. I just felt, well, I don't know what you're smoking, but I want to smoke what you're smoking. He was just such a compelling human being. So, and I don't even remember the pointing out particularly. So, I think, you know, to say, I don't know what that was and it was no big deal. That's perfect. That's a perfect sort of description of the pointing out experience. You know, as you know, Kempo Kunga has talked about this a lot. One of the defining characteristics of nature of mind is you can't pin it down. And consequently, when it's pointed out, it's not something you can say, oh, that was it. But something changes. Something in the atmospherically changes for you. If only that you've seen it live in another person. In a qualified guru, you say, okay, I don't know what it is, but there's something that this person's got going on that makes me trust whatever he or she is saying. And that's plenty. Yeah.
Yep. Thank you.
That's why, by the way, you know, it's not something we get one time. You know, we get it as often as we can or as often as possible from various people. And each time we get it, something changes a little bit. Catherine.
Oops. Okay. Hi, Tim. Hey. Hi, everyone. Yeah, I want to say something in response to what Lon asked and what then Don added to. Because when I like Lon, when I came across that part of the teaching in this section, I was like, oh, I had a kind of reaction like, well, here's a kind of stop, here's a kind of block, here's a wall or something that's saying, you know, you can't go there, you can't proceed unless you've had the pointing out instructions. And and I guess I wanted to, I don't know, I want to share that, as Don was saying, you can have you can meet the nature of your mind before having the pointing out instructions. And that's what I wanted to say too. That's been my experience. And because of seeing the nature of my mind many years ago, that is why I began the path. Had I not seen the nature of my mind, I would not be here. And what my personal experience, and there obviously, you know, an infinite number of experiences that for every individual, but for me, it did change my life. And I had a kind of, within me, a feeling of, I don't know what this is. This is totally life-changing. And I felt there was a kind of instruction saying, now you need to really go back to the beginning and really work it out and learn it step by step. And so for me, this path is the kind of formal instruction that's making sense of what I already know. It's like exactly as everybody says, it's like coming home. But when you've got people teaching it in a formalized way with all the analysis and all the experience of teaching it to people, introducing it to every kind of individual imaginable, then it it enriches and it reassures, and so there's a most amazing reassurance from it. And so for I wanted to say to Lon that you can, all your experiences are completely valid and completely remarkable, the insights you're having, but that the pointing out instruction may be a kind of additional aid to say, to recognize yet again, or even with greater greater recognition of this, of what we're all trying to sort of see and recognize. And because it felt, reading the in the lesson, in the teaching, it did feel a little bit like, oh, here's a block. And so I wanted to, you know, acknowledge that I could see how a student could take it that way. And
yeah, when I read Whitman Grimche said, I thought, he could have nuanced that a little differently.
Yeah.
He was a little blunt about it. He's always a little blunt about this. But, go ahead.
And maybe another thing I wanted to say was that in the teaching of this extraordinary thing, business, the teachers themselves, the institutions that are teaching, they need some way to understand where the students are at, don't they, in order to regulate the dosage and to follow the paths of all these thousands and thousands and thousands of students. So, you know, it's helpful to know that the student has had the pointing out instructions and has arrived at that particular point. It's a way to organize the teaching.
It is a sequential training. So the critical thing about, first of all, people learn person to person, particularly on this level. They learn in the presence of other people who have had the experience. And we've talked with Mingyur Rinpoche many times about the question of giving pointing out instructions online. And it really comes down to this, that it's like they're smelling the fresh baked bed. If you can do it online, but it will lose the impact, the immediacy, the personal quality of it. And if it does, then someone will have a kind of diluted experience. And then they'll go, well, that was nothing. And then they'll give up the path, or they'll go somewhere else. They'll lose their confidence in the method. So, as I said, we've talked with Mingyur Rinpoche for years about this. And, and that's what we've come up with. Yeah. Thanks, Catherine.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Lisa.
Good morning, everybody. I wanted to speak to this, Tim, because when I started with Teragar, I was allowed to go to one of the retreats because in my mind, I had to go to retreat. And the teachers granted me permission. I had no idea what I learned. I was there. I was in the environment. But you talked about the mind being cluttered. And that's exactly it. It was an experience, but nothing went in. And it wasn't after many, many years of being on the path, Tim. I've been on the path about 12, 13 years, that slowly this very cluttered mind is starting to open up. And I've done all the practices, all the joy of living, level 1, 2, 3, the path of liberation, Nondro twice. It's just starting to open. So I want to speak to that. This just takes time because of who we are, because of our habitual tendencies, because of our many, many lives. But we have to have confidence. Rinpoche has had tremendous confidence in us. He sees us as a Buddha. So what you've said time and again is it's just about us seeing this in ourselves. And it's not easy. Along this path, as I've noticed, things reemerge. They just do. And it's scary and we want to, you know, head out the other door. But it's workable. It's all workable. Yeah. Just wanted to share that, Tim.
Great. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Lisa.
You're welcome.
Marilyn.
Good morning. Good morning, everybody. Yesterday I was tuning in, I think it was yesterday, with Cortland Dahl talking about pointing out instructions. And I realized, for me, one of the differential, I don't know about questions or interested in how you would distinguish between the transmission and the instruction. Because in my experience, when I went to pointing out, the whole time I was in the huge auditorium with Mingyur and all the other teachers and everybody else, I got very, very sleepy. And I said, I've come all the way here, I've traveled across country, instructions, and I was falling asleep. And I realized what I thought, my interpretation was, I was afraid of, I'm 78 years old, that it somehow was bringing up my fear of death. And then when I went home back to California, one day I was swimming outside and I looked up at the sky and I saw a cloud against the sky. And all of a sudden I felt like I was in the mind, the empty mind. I felt like I was in the mind of the teachers. And it was it felt like the transmission as opposed to the actual instruction, but I recognized it as somehow maybe coming from my experience back in Boston, where I was at the time of the pointing out. So, and I feel like transmission is a very, very, and when you were talking about the cantor in the Courvoisier building, it was the sounds from him probably that woke up for you that pointing out. So there's a transmission aspect to all of this that's very, very profound. Right. And then I'll tag on my next question, which is, as I'm aging and as my mind and my body are kind of reconfiguring, deconstructing, my relationship to my life, to my narrative, is all being influenced and affected by the proximity and the reality of this mortality. It's even juicier than ever. I'm finding sometimes a kind of like I'm wandering sometimes in a dark wood. And I'm interested in it and I'm curious about it. And I bring myself back to the experience of it. It's a little bit scary. And sometimes I wish I had more of an access to somebody saying, while you're doing this and you're aging, these are how those two experiences come together, because it's a very profound time of life.
It is. I've often aspired, and it may yet happen, of having some series of meetings for, people towards the end of their life. Also, Mingyur Rinpoche's brother, Sokmi Rinpoche, is doing quite a bit with this. I can't exactly say how to access it. Maybe get on his website and nose around. For instance, he's had some meetings he has a series of meetings just with people around these issues. So, yeah, good question and good reminder. Yeah, I'm right behind you. Okay, Anu.
Very much on the same theme. I had in the past, like even 40 years ago, quite a number of glimpses of what I also glimpsed when I was getting the pointing out experience. And I hadn't a clue what it was. It's not something you can talk about. It's like there's such a gap there. You can't describe it to anybody. And I was left wondering, have I gone a bit mad? Am I hallucinating? Am I just imagining? And I found that I've needed the joy of living, the path of liberation, the pointing out experiences, and with other people. I still can't talk about what I might experience when this happens. But it definitely has stopped me from feeling maybe I'm just mad, maybe I'm just imagining it. But that's the value of it for me.
Great, great. Even sometimes, like you said, when we get pointing out and it's sort of like kind of nothing, then we have confidence in that. That we don't need to reach for some amazing experience. that it's so ordinary, we don't trust it. So this is why it's so tremendously helpful to get someone to validate that. That it actually, it's the nature of mind is, you know, it's like water to a fish. It's so much part of the fish that they don't have even like the distinction water. Similarly, our mind's nature is so much who we are that it's too close. So this is why in various methods we have to actually step back from it so that we can see, oh, that's it. And that's ordinary confused mind. This is clear, open, stable mind's basis. This is what we need to see. Mm-hmm. And then we're good to go. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, everybody. Anybody have a last comment, question, complaint? Don has put something about Sogyal Rinpoche. Yeah. In the chat box. Thanks, Don. So also, you know, it's important to remember that this isn't a kind of forced march, that this is our practice for the rest of our life. This is not some sort of, you know, sort of speed bump or something or some sort of irritant that we've got to now tackle. This is a practice that we'll do for the rest of our life. And we'll loop back and do this again and again and learn this material again and again. And if possible, get pointing out again and again. This is the way our life training goes. So it would be a drag if all of a sudden, bingo, we're at the end of the, you know, that's it and that's all there's going to be. This is the kind of thing that we just come back to forever. It's wonderful. Sasha.
Hi.
Where did Sasha go?
There's Sasha. Hi. So when I got the pointing out instructions, and it was only a few months ago, I just found it hilarious. And it somehow, and now I realize the goal is to kind of just stay in the state in which I can appreciate how ridiculous it is that we don't realize it. And that the ability to access that under calm conditions has really been reinforced by the Nundro practice I started,
right,
which is like the most important boot camp I could ever. We have these unexpected assumptions that are so deep in so many layers. And the older we are, the more of them we have. And so I'm in a transition point with my daughter, who is now really an adult. And yet she's my child. And so when things come up, and the question is how to, like, do you prepare yourself for these moments in which you completely forget nature of mind and you get all like, you know, how to facilitate finding this, coming back to the realization in the state under these emotionally intense kind of situations.
This is why we meditate in the morning or whenever, so that we become familiar with the practice of getting lost and coming back. The practice is really getting lost and coming back. We don't have to train in the nature of mind. The nature of mind is unchangeable, so there's no point in training it. So, which is a whole nother discussion. So the training really is noticing distraction. Each time we get distracted and come back, then we create a groove, a kind of habit, so that eventually becoming distracted and coming back becomes mutually sort of enhancing. That getting distracted is the prompt to come back without effort. This is called mindfulness with no effort. Yeah. And the teaching is, I was just reading something from Tolkien about this, that actually when our experience is heightened, then actually nature of mind is more available it's more available to us because the distinction between agitated, heightened mind and what's underneath it, you know, the ocean itself rather than the big waves, becomes very, very clear. And so he, in this was in like one of the last conversations I had with him, he actually said the nature of mind is easier to recognize when the emotions are high than it is when the emotions are placid.
So do I need to stir up my emotions on the cushion?
No, you have plenty. You have plenty. Don't worry.
Okay.
If you have a daughter, you have plenty.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, everybody. So as always, let's just take a moment to imagine the possibility that something wholesome, helpful has happened in the last hour. Something that we've learned, something has inspired us. And just imagine that that goodness, we can just sprinkle it around the globe in a world that needs it so badly. And then as we go out in the day, in the next week or so, we can just remember, just from time to time, just simply notice, how tight am I? How collapsed is my mind? How rigid am I? Then breathe, and then just open up again. Open up to open awareness, to nature of mind. Open up to the environment, to the sun, the sky. Just open back up. And we can make this a kind of game, just to notice, oh, now I'm contracted and everything is irritating and small things have become disproportionately enormous. Now I'm open, more relaxed, and there's more ease. And just play that game. This is the dance of a practitioner. This is the daily practice of a practitioner. Okay, everybody, let's unmute and say goodbye. Thank you so very much. We'll see each other again.
Thank you so much, everybody.
Thank you.
Goodbye, Tim. Thank you.
Bye. Be well.